Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. In a world where action movies are constantly exploding at the box office, our heroes take on the monumental task of dissecting and analyzing all aspects of action movies to truly understand what it takes to make a great action film. Ben Bateman, Andrew Guy, in a Popcorn Talk Network exclusive, this is Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy on Popcorn Talk, the online movie network dedicated to talking movies, all things movie related. I'm your host of Action Movie Anatomy, Ben Bateman. Excited to be here talking Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation. I'm full of energy. These guys are laughing. This is my great co-host, Andrew Guy, my wonderful co-host.
Lovely. I thought it was lovely.
Lovely. He's lovely and amazing and wonderful.
I wish you would remember what you called me.
Yes, I'm here. I'm so excited to talk about this movie. Love this movie. I want to watch it like 10 more times in theaters.
We probably will. At least one more time together. No question.
That's right.
And this is our resident Mission Impossible expert. She's been here for the last... You didn't do three with us,
but she did
four. You did Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol last week with us, and you did a great job, so we wanted to bring you back.
Thank you. And she saw the screener. Yeah, I was exploding at the seams last week, because I had already seen five, too, and I couldn't say anything, so now we can talk about it, too.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah, I don't know
so
how you loved can do that.
I loved it. Holy crap, I loved it.
Because she was embargoed. She couldn't discuss it legally. So every time we mentioned it, she'd just be like, I saw the film.
That's it. Go see the film.
No further comments.
And then we will talk.
So this is Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. We're going to do a full review of the film. Let's cue the trailer maybe and check it out.
It's a sweet trailer. Yeah.
Super
all
sweet.
Of them were great.
It's a good trailer, yeah.
Benji, the syndicate is real.
Yeah. His delivery of the line changes trailer to trailer, and it's different in the movie.
Yes.
My favorite is the super intense one.
This is the one from this one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Everyone, shut up.
Benji, the syndicate is real, and they know who we are. A Rogue Nation trained to do what we do.
He's such a badass.
So badass.
Without equal, immune to any countermeasures. But it is an agency of chaos.
The time has come to dissolve the IMF.
Now I want you to choose your next
mission.
Baldwin's bent in. I was going to say, I actually like Baldwin.
He was well cast.
Yeah.
Last I heard, he was tracking the syndicate. Oh. How come the CIA?
Oh, yeah.
The rabbit's foot.
The reference to each of the previous four movies. There's one reference to each of the four movies.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. The rabbit's foot being the most obvious one, I think.
We've never met before.
She's a
stone cold. That was one of my favorite lines, too.
She's a stone cold badass.
Amazing.
She
might be
gorgeous.
The best part of the whole movie, really.
She is. She's
Ethan, where are you?
The syndicate is real.
A rogue nation trained to do what we do.
An anti-IMF.
And the super, super, super slowed down version. Yeah.
I just got the chills.
Yeah, sweet.
And I've seen it twice.
This may very well be our last mission.
Let's make it count.
Let's make it count.
I love Renner.
I do too.
Yeah, but you know what's weird about him in this movie? Is like, I thought about it after the fact.
He's not great in it.
He kind of just bitches the whole time. He doesn't actually really do anything. He doesn't have a single action scene, right?
Well, just the car chase.
But he's not even...
Yeah, I mean, he's just
right? He just shows up at a 4x4.
Well, he's running at some point with Tom Cruise. The two of them are running at one moment simultaneously.
Like, if Cruise is ever running with anyone, his running outclasses everyone else.
I know that, but I think... It was an interesting thing to show both of them running like that, because it was like,
I mean, look at her, though.
Yeah.
She's...
How do you know we can trust her?
Desperate times.
Desperate measures.
Desperate times. Desperate measures.
You have your seatbelt on? You ask me that now!
Oh, hey, boys, what did I miss?
Simon Pegg is...
He was great.
Everyone's great.
It's so well cast. It really, really is.
Open the door!
Yeah, I'm trying.
I like how they never show the end of it. Oh, no, they do. Yeah. I love when it gets sucked in the door.
God, he's nuts.
So
he's
good.
Nuts.
That's crazy, though, now with the context that
you
can see his eyes.
Yeah, you can see his eyes are wide open.
Yeah.
It's sort of unfathomable. I'm trying to imagine just driving myself at the side of an airplane. And there's a cable. He's got the harness that's attached to the cable, and that's what's like it's like just a cable.
Yeah,
right. That's
just around the door.
Yeah,
that's it. 5,000 feet up in the air.
The size of his
jet. What? It's just like, it's so absurd.
I mean, Tom Cruise has to have pretty big balls.
Oh, yeah. He's a total badass.
Yeah, he's just pretty much the ultimate badass.
Tom Cruise. He really is.
So let's get into bold statements.
Don't be stealing my statements.
I think we all sort of have... I think the statement is just that Tom Cruise is awesome.
Yeah.
So my statement is that based on the financial, and we'll get to the financials of this film, but based on the financial success, as well as the critical appeal of both 4 and 5, but now really highlighted by the fifth movie, the Tom Cruise action brand is in the stratosphere. It's a class of its own. There is no other action brand that can actually compete with just like the Tom Cruise action brand. It is the greatest of all time. It's unparalleled by anyone else's, and I think Mission Impossible 5 is the ultimate proof that a 53-year-old Tom Cruise can make the fifth installment in this franchise. It's going to make the most money.
Yes.
It's going to be the best reviewed.
Yep.
He looks the best in 3, but for a 53-year-old guy, he looks better than he looked 4 years ago. Yeah. Like, the stunts are better. The action's better. Yep. The movie's better. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean, he is the greatest action star of our generation, or maybe ever. And like you and I had a conversation about this one night, and I was saying, well, Harrison Ford, you think about Harrison Ford and Indiana Jones and Star Wars and all that he's done, but Tom Cruise is, it is,
it's different action, that's more like, go ahead.
It's much different, like the things that he does.
Yeah,
my bold statement is that Tom Cruise is a bigger badass than Ethan Hunt.
I like that. It's a really good one.
Because Tom Cruise is not a superhero. He's not a trained special agent.
Yeah.
And Ethan Hunt dies in this movie. Tom Cruise can hold his breath longer than Ethan Hunt.
It's the second Mission Impossible movie that Tom Cruise has died in.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And he can hold his breath for 6 minutes in real life.
Yeah.
And Hunt dies after 4.
There's a great line, Chris McQuarrie.
That's amazing.
Right?
I love that.
The writer and director, Chris McQuarrie, when he was asked... what are the biggest differences that you see between Tom Cruise and Ethan Hunt? And he says, there's one that comes to mind, one major one. It's that Ethan Hunt wants to do everything possible to avoid doing these stunts. Tom Cruise is exactly the opposite.
Right.
All he wants to do is do these stunts. That's the only thing he wants to do. More than anything, he wants to do these stunts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Mine was that Tom Cruise is the best action actor ever. I don't think there's another guy that holds it, that delivers it, that does the stunts. Like, he encompasses everything. Like, there's other greats, like the Harrison Fords and stuff, but they don't encompass all of it the way that Tom Cruise does. I mean, even from back in the day, movies like Top Gun and stuff, like, it's always been an adrenaline junkie type of something that lures you in, and it's him.
Yeah.
Like, his character is doing this stuff, but it's actually him who does it. Like you said, it's almost he's more badass than his characters.
So I think those are great. I think it's funny too, having watched so many of his movies and then see the development, like as we're talking about his sort of action brand and like the little ticks that he's added over the years. If you guys notice that he does this thing now, he didn't used to do this. There's like a particular look. It's this like, it's the look where, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I know exactly.
It's the new one. Right?
Yeah.
Like
it's
we
very
all know
subtle,
we all know
but it
I'm going to do this.
Volumes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. He does it like it's the something in the last 5 years that I noticed.
It's like when Peg is talking to Rebecca Ferguson, and she's like, "Well, you have to hold your breath." He's just like, "Oh, don't worry about him.
Yeah.
He'll be fine." And his face is like, it's so good.
I've noticed it in Reacher. That was the one where I first noticed it, and I started to look back, and you see it in the fourth movie too.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of like, all right, here we go.
Yeah, right.
It's like,
do you really think that I can't do this?
Yeah.
I'm Tom Cruise? Come on. All right, so let's do our fist pump moments, guys. This is the first part of the show where we like to ask for some interaction if you guys are watching and you want to get in on the fun. The fist pump for us is sort of that moment where you're watching the movie and maybe you're on the couch and something crazy happens or anything happens, really, and you're wildly looking around. You're like, is anyone else seeing this right now? Are you seeing what's happening? He's on an airplane.
Yeah.
Or just something that where you're just like, this is so awesome. And that's the fist pump. So we each share one of those, and then we're going to kind of get into the breakdowns, the star profiles, if you will. So if you have an idea and you want to tweet at me or any of these guys, I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
At Andrew Guy.
At I Am Steph Z.
Or you can leave a comment in the YouTube comments. Just let us know what you think. And let's do it, guys. What's your fist pump moment? What do you got?
Please.
I've got two.
Please.
This movie, I mean, probably
it deserves,
had 12.
Yeah, exactly.
My first fist pump moment was when Tom Cruise shimmied up that pole when he couldn't get the key to fit in his handcuffs.
So
I mean, he put any pole dancer to shame, number one. And he looked probably better than any of them, too.
Ridiculous core strength. Absurd.
Upper body, core, ridiculous. And the fact, like, in that moment, he's like, okay, this isn't going to work. I got to get off this pole.
It's like, oh, I know what to do.
Okay, I'll just go upside down and shimmy up it. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
It was insane. Like, you were like, it was one of those moments when you're watching a movie and you're like, I would have never thought of that. That is movie magic right there.
Yeah.
Because you're just sort of like, what the hell? Like, okay, like,
oh, he just did that. Yeah, he just did that.
I've done like core strength training, and like my core is pretty strong. And like being on a pole like that, being able to just move my legs and like hold them in position, like up at the one angle
while jumping, or like,
is already difficult enough. Just do like three or four of those, and you'll be exhausted.
Yeah,
to do like three or four of those while like vaulting your body up a pole and then like maintaining, and that like I just don't even.
53.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's literally twice my age.
He needs to do Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
I think that's what needs to happen.
There should be a celebrity Ninja Warrior.
It'll just be Tom Cruise winning every time.
He would so win. That's a good idea. And then my second one was when Rebecca Ferguson, when Tom Cruise is underwater and he runs out of oxygen and she gets him. Because I feel, for me, it was very interesting how she was the villain and the hero. Like, she teetered the line so well whose side she was on.
Right.
So it was like, okay, she saved them. And then, you know, a couple minutes later, she leaves. But it's like, it was very interesting, like, oh, yes. And then it's like, oh. Yeah.
My second fist pump, my second thesis, the one that I almost went with, is Rebecca Ferguson is the best part of this movie.
She is.
Ooh. And I think she is. I actually think she's better than any of the action, really. She's tough as nails. She almost just steals the show completely.
Well, she does. And the reason is not only because she's a complete stone cold fox and badass.
Yeah.
Like, her moves, everything she does, like, she's an incredible fighter. She knife fights that dude that's like 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she brings a level of honesty and sincerity, and she raises the stakes. She's the one character in this movie where you're like, are you going to die? Are you going to make it?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that this guy, the Solomon guy, wants to kill you, clearly, but he's keeping you around long enough to do whatever, you know, whatever it is he needs from you.
Right.
Right.
She brings that heart. Now, I still feel like this movie is missing a soul a little bit, and I know that's like a weird thing to say, but she brings a lot of heart to this film, and it makes you really care and deeply invest in her character. And that's what I missed from 4.
Yeah.
Well, she's kind of like mind screwing you too.
Yeah, you don't
see that in a lot of the other ones. Right. Yeah, you're like, who is she? What's her agenda, really?
Yeah,
you're
trying to,
like, it makes you think in a way that's different from the previous women in these roles, I think.
It's kind of like Anne Hathaway in Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah. You know what I mean? She's got the right eyes for like deception.
Just the look.
Like, spy deception. It's like,
you want to trust her.
Beautifully cast. Right. Perfectly cast. Yeah. What's your fist pump?
So my fist pump moment is a combination of two things, but it's in the same moment. It's the plane taking off.
Yeah.
The reason for me for that is because I'd watched so much about him doing this and prepping for it, and like, just him be like, no, let's do it. 5,000 feet in the air. Let's do it. 8 takes? Yeah, we need 7. No, we need to do one more. It's not good enough.
Let's do another one for safety. Let's do another one for safety.
But the reason that it was my fist pump moment is like, all the characters are there. It's like Simon Pegg is there, and then all of a sudden you hear that Luther's there, and then Brandt's involved, and then out of nowhere comes Tom Cruise running over the hill. Benji! You know, like, wearing a suit.
He comes out of nowhere running in the suit, and you're like, ah, he's the gang, he's back together. And then he slides across the wing of the airplane.
And like, no one knows that they're all supposed to be there, but they're all there.
It's a great opener.
Right.
I loved it.
That would have been my fist bump, that exact moment.
Right.
Because him coming out of nowhere, off screen, running. Like, there's, you know, his Twitter, I've said this before, it's like Tom Cruise, actor, producer, running in movies since 1981. Yeah. That's what it says on his Twitter profile. And it's like, he's totally in on the joke. So it's like, he knows, you know, in every single movie, Tom Cruise running, Tom Cruise on a motorcycle. It's practically in the contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like, just for him to come sprinting off screen in a suit, jumping on the airplane, and you're like, he's still got it! You're like, I was totally with you. So my moment would have been that. Had we not been in the theater sitting next to a dad and his daughter, and his daughter she couldn't have been more than 8 years old, right? And so, like, during the movie, like, she's in the row in front of him, and she crawls over the railing, and she's, like, sitting in his lap. And I'm kind of annoyed because she's, you know, she's talking and talking during the scene. But whatever, she stopped. I kind of let it go. In the scene where Cruise jumps, he jackknifes into the water.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm totally like a little kid because I love Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible, and I'm watching. I'm so excited. And the little girl's like, she's like, how's he going to get out of it?
Yeah.
How's he going to get out of it? And I just was like, I had this moment of just like, what I would give to be 8 years old again.
That was us.
Yeah. Watching an action movie.
Yeah.
And like, this 8 year old doesn't even understand how awesome it is that Tom Cruise is 53 and she's still completely invested in Ethan Hunt.
Right.
It's the same experience. It's a parallel experience. And I just was like, it just kind of, I put the smile on my face of like, man, that is so cool. That is so awesome. That he's, and if Cruz like ever watches this clip talking about this,
right?
Like, you know what I mean? I think he would take some real joy away from that.
Oh, absolutely, man. Yeah.
Knowing that like that's like as a critic that I'm in theater and that's like
that's the moment that stands out as an 8-year-old girl,
yeah,
respecting and appreciating you as an action superstar when you're in your 50s, right. Yeah.
Well, because he's timeless.
Completely,
he's super timeless.
He doesn't age.
Yeah.
No. His demo, everyone, I mean, now it's even more clear. We talked about it last week that, you know, our generation, our kids, everyone could like this. Even younger, 8 years old to, like, you gotta, there's gotta be the 50, 60, 7-year-olds watching this movie too, being like, yeah, good on him for still having it at 53 for us, you know?
My mom is 67 years old and she still absolutely loves Tom Cruise. Right. I know she would love this movie.
His hair is immaculate. No, the movie, obviously, you know, won in the box office, did extremely well. Yeah. You've been paying attention, you guys. I'll probably know that the movie was highly successful, but the people that went and saw the movie, the major demographic were males 25 to 40.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's pretty indicative right there is you have the 8-year-olds who saw Tom Cruise growing up that are now us.
Yeah.
And that's who's seeing the movie is people who are like, yeah, I've come full circle on Cruise. We talked about this a little bit last week.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Kobe Bryant effect.
Right.
The Tom Brady effect. Incidentally, three of my favorite people.
Right.
That it's like these people that sort of, they stick, their greatness continues. They stick with the criticism and they kind of come full circle on the way that they were criticized their whole career and they just kind of maintain.
Yeah.
And in the latter half of that career, people finally are just like, I'm done criticizing.
I have to respect you.
There's nothing else I can say.
There's all I can do is just say like, you know what? I might have hated you for those few years, for that 10 years, but goddamn.
You're great.
You are awesome, and I have to just tip my hat to you. The worst thing I can do is just say I'm not interested, but I can't criticize you anymore.
Yeah. He's back. He's back on top.
Seems like it.
It's done.
Yeah.
And let's get into his
breakdowns.
Get
into Star Profiles. Yeah. Yeah. So we did, you know, Ghost Protocol last week, and if you guys are interested, you can check that review out. It should be on the Popcorn Talk playlist on YouTube.
It's a great episode.
And if you guys listen to audio, I'm not sure how many people listen to this audio, but I know we go out as an audio podcast. So please, like, leave us an iTunes review or tweet at us. Just let us know you're out there, because I want to know. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Right.
We did Ghost Protocol last week, and we kind of had talked about, like, leading up to Ghost Protocol, where his career was. He had kind of been in the tank for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
For about 5 years, he had really been struggling for any relevance. And he had a couple bright moments, but 2011, that was the first step in the sort of image rehabilitation.
Right.
Did a lot for his career.
Yep.
Movie made a lot of money. It was very well received. I wouldn't say that he was back on top at that point.
No.
But it was kind of like it was the one success in an otherwise pretty...
He got jump-started. It was the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, because if you look what happened right after, Jack Reacher 2012,
mm-hmm.
flop. Right. Nobody really saw it.
But they're making another one for some reason.
For some reason.
Because it's Tom Cruise.
Exactly.
Oblivion 2013, I'll admit, one of the only Tom Cruise movies I've never seen.
Yep.
And as somebody who loves the guy and as an expert, I feel like I should have. I just, for whatever reason, I didn't want to see it. No, it was also a flop.
Yep.
Poorly reviewed.
Yeah.
Edge of Tomorrow, which is an incredible movie, which we did on this show, it was the second episode. Loved it to death. Was critically a success, but financially, we'd call it a flop, but...
Yeah, it was not successful financially. Especially not even on, like, a scale. Like,
it cost $175 million. It cost $175 million to make, and I think it only grossed, like, $100 US.
Like, yeah, it was like a little over two-something, or, like, around three worldwide.
Three worldwide, like 330. So, I mean, it made money, but, like, can you consider that much? Like, that's not what they're looking for.
No.
You don't put $175 million in a movie. You hope worldwide makes... Not even twice as much.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it was critically well received and people paid attention. And and I think when you talk to people about that movie, most people will say that movie's great.
Yeah.
It's a really good movie. So I think that was kind of on his way to where he is now, which is this was a big make or break moment because this movie was supposed to open at 40 million,
yeah.
but it opened at 56 domestic.
And it was supposed to open in December. But they were too worried about Spectre and Star Wars because they don't have enough faith in the brand still to hold up and maintain against those movies. Where I feel like if it was just Spectre, like, yeah, the box office would be lower because, you know, everyone's
splitting it.
But competing against Star Wars is just a suicide.
Star Wars 7 is going to break every record.
Probably.
We've
been waiting,
sure.
what, 30 years for another great Star Wars movie since the other ones that came out were just horrible?
I think it's going to break the records, but I wonder if it's going to stand to the expectations of everybody. There's so many expectations.
I mean, Abrams is, he's like one of these people, he's kind of a golden boy, like what he touches, but that's a subject for another time. I mean, I hope it's great. They showed the trailer for it before MI5,
yeah.
right.
and I've seen the trailer like 7 or 8 times already.
But watching it in IMAX was...
I just... I mean, you were walking in as it was on, and I was just gripping my hat, just like, losing my mind. It's so exciting. I cannot wait for those movies. Yeah.
We're home.
Yeah.
That's great.
But anyway, so yeah, in terms of Cruise and this last, like, sort of 3 or 4 years leading up to this, it has been pretty interesting. I mean, I've kept the faith, obviously, but the movies that we didn't list here that are right before this were like Night and Day. You had Lions for Lambs.
Yeah.
You know, you had like
Rock of Ages, which he was in with Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, I mean, just not particularly good movies.
Yeah.
Part of his career that was unceremonious, to say the least. But it looks like he's back on top in the next few.
This is this is the perfect time for this movie to come out. Everyone's on board. Everyone loves Tom Cruise again, and then he's going to do this movie that's kind of like not a reimagining of his career, but it's a different step in his career. You know, Mena.
Oh, Mena, yeah, Doug Liman's movie. Yeah, I'm excited for that one. I think it should be good. So now let's jump to the other side. Rebecca Ferguson,
yes,
an actress who really leading up to this movie, I don't want to say no one knew who she was, but compared to Tom Cruise,
but everyone knows her now.
yeah, seriously,
complete badass in this movie. She fits the bill perfectly as far as exotic, mysterious, not a girl, a woman.
Yes.
That's like that's a defining characteristic for the women in these movies.
Yes, exactly.
And strong.
Yeah.
Mentally and physically.
And you believe it.
Fully.
You see her do things. It's like Emily Blunt in Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
You get in Charlize Theron and Mad Max. You get these female, like, superhumans, basically.
Yeah.
And it's completely believable. And
yeah.
She totally kills it.
Yeah, she
I would
does a great
say
job.
Stronger
she's vulnerable
than any
too.
Of those two that you just mentioned.
You know, I actually think so as well.
Yeah,
and
which is
I love
Emily
Blunt
and
Charlize.
Edge.
Yeah.
But this, her, like, she stole the show.
Yeah,
she stole the show from Tom Cruise. Who does that?
It's interesting that, like, he champions these women, right? Like, his last two movies now have had two of the female characters we would reference as two of the best in recent memory, or both co-stars of Tom Cruise.
And like, he picked her from watching the miniseries she was in.
Yeah,
was
from
like,
White
I
Queen.
Want her.
So let's talk about that. So Hercules 2014, right, with The Rock.
Which is funny because I saw that movie, and I mean, I only saw it once, and I was like, whatever about it, but I don't remember her being in it.
Yeah, I'd skip that one.
I was
going to
say that too. It wasn't memorable.
Yeah.
Like,
not
at all.
I was like, wait, how is...
And I really wanted to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I skipped that one. The White Queen, which was a Starz miniseries, it looked kind of like a Starz Game of Thrones in some ways, the way the trailer worked. I didn't watch it, but I watched little bits and pieces of it online.
Right.
That's what it kind of looked like, the way that all the verbiage and everything they were using thrown around. If you have seen it and I'm getting it wrong, please forgive me. I'm not saying that I know exactly about it, but I did try to read about it and understand it. But I guess it was well received. It was critically well received, and that's how Cruise found out about her.
Mm-hmm.
Because originally her role was supposed to be Jessica Chastain. That's who they wanted for this.
And I was gonna, I love Jessica Chastain, but I lost a lot of respect for her.
Turning
she,
it down?
Because she didn't want to train for 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, really? You're going to turn down a Mission Impossible movie where you're the lead female? You're going to be a complete badass?
But everything works out the way it's supposed to,
because
I don't think she would have been as good as
I don't either.
Person
yeah.
at
I 100%
all. I mean, and I'm a fan of her, but... You know, I feel like that was smart.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I like Chastain a lot. I'm a huge fan. I don't know.
She wouldn't have held it like Rebecca did.
Yeah, no. I don't. She just doesn't
she's
seem like
strong.
She's strong. Correct.
These women, Jessica Chastain, Maggie Q, and Paula Patton.
Yeah,
and even the Brad Bird.
Yeah.
What are you doing? How do you turn this movie down?
Yeah.
All those people walked away from this movie for other projects. I don't even know what the Warrens were for. I mean, other than Chastain.
Yeah.
But Maggie Q and Paula Patton walked away for other projects. I have no idea what they are. And I get Brad Bird wanting to direct Tomorrowland, but I would have directed this over Tomorrowland.
Yeah, I mean, especially with how successful 4 was. I mean, you got to look at, like, from the point of view of artistry, there's that whole, like, I want to be involved in this project.
Yeah.
So, like, Brad Bird is the one where I'm a little less, like, he won Oscars for his animated movies, and then he made Mission Impossible 4, and he kind of conquered that, sort of. And so he's like, Tomorrowland is this project he really wanted to do, because also, as we mentioned last week, Brad Bird wanted to direct Star Wars 7.
Yep.
But he was like, I can't give up on Tomorrowland. I have to finish Tomorrowland. So he wouldn't step in to start, so he was very attached to that movie, clearly. That was something that was important to him.
Yeah. And it's like Steph said, it all worked out.
Yeah.
This was perfectly cast, directed, everything.
Yeah.
So the last movie here that is listed is this movie V, 2013, which I think is a German film, German or Danish film, and it's co-starring Stellan Skarsgård's son. Alongside Rebecca Ferguson, but not particularly well reviewed.
Haven't even heard of it.
Yeah.
Exactly. So her, I mean, really compared to like the other people in question, compared to say Jessica Chastain, I mean, Rebecca Ferguson was just plucked.
Yeah.
For this movie.
Because of Cruise.
Because of Cruise. Yeah.
Which is amazing that he's that involved.
Yeah.
You know, and not even that he's that involved. Like, a lot of actors want to be that involved, and they don't make correct choices, and they should let people,
yeah,
other people, like, casting and stuff
do
it. Exactly. Yeah. But he does it so well.
Yeah, I mean, he's just super involved in this project.
Like, and he just, I mean, obviously being a major producer,
yeah,
but he knows. He knows who plays well with him.
Yeah.
You know, he's been doing this long enough.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about production development, how this movie got made.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much the same team behind it as Mission Impossible mm-hmm. 4, for the most part. And Mission Impossible 6 was greenlit by Paramount. That's going to be coming out. They're saying it might even start filming as soon as early next year. So same production team, same deal. You have J.J. Abrams, his producing partner Brian Burke, Tom Cruise, David Ellison, who is Skydance Productions, 33-year-old kid, son of an oil billionaire. It's the same team, and I think the same team will be doing 6.
Can I interrupt real quick?
Yeah, please.
Because we were watching an interview on a UK like online show with Pegg and Ferguson and McQuarrie and Cruise, and this is more to the audience. It's kind of a question to you guys because we were kind of in the dark about this, and we weren't able to find out a lot about it online. During the interview, Tom Cruise talks about how McQuarrie wrote Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol,
mm-hmm.
but he has no writing credits for it. It's nowhere on any of their Wikipedias, IMDb's, on the internet anywhere. So if any of you guys know about this at all, please comment or let us know or tweet at us, whatever it is, so that we can kind of get to the bottom of this, because I want to know why Cruise would say that McQuarrie wrote a movie that he didn't.
Also,
Tom Cruise is so involved, and he wouldn't make that mistake, I don't think.
Agreed. And well, yeah. The weird thing was, prior to that, we were sort of like, did we talk about McQuarrie writing 4 last week? I was like, yeah,
right.
I was like, yeah, he wrote 4. And you were like, okay. And then you're like, wait, no, he didn't. It wasn't on a breakdown. And you're like, no, he's not listed here. And then we turn the interview on, and the first question
yeah.
Cruise says is, yeah, and Chris, you know, wrote 4. So that's very weird. It's definitely, it's confusing.
Very confusing.
But nonetheless, Christopher McQuarrie was very involved in this film, obviously, mm-hmm. as
right.
the director. He also wrote it. And for those of you who don't know McQuarrie's story, he's actually one of the really interesting ones. You know, Christopher McQuarrie was made famous by writing The Usual Suspects in 1995. He won the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay.
Yeah.
That was his calling card, right? His claim to fame as a young mm-hmm. guy in Hollywood. Now, a few years later, after, you know, working on various projects with Bryan Singer, I believe he wrote Apt Pupil, I want to say. I could be making that up. But he wrote and directed The Way of the Gun in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Benicio del Toro, Ryan Phillippe, very, like, at the time, extremely hot actors. The movie is kind of a cult classic in some ways. I know a lot of people that like The Way of the Gun. It's a crimey sort of big, you know, I don't think it's a heist film. I remember seeing it years ago, but I don't remember much about it. But after 2000, McQuarrie's career kind of tanked.
Yeah.
So that, I don't think that movie made any money, and he's involved in a few projects, but between 2000 and 2008, McQuarrie has almost no credits. He's basically the guy that wrote Usual Suspects, tanked with The Way of the Gun, and then doesn't have anything. Now, if there was something going on...
He has no credits at all.
No.
If there's anything in his personal life going on that I'm unaware of, I mean, please forgive me. Obviously, we do our research on the show, but, like, I'm not a Christopher McQuarrie expert.
Right.
I go basically off of professional. But I would go as far as to say Tom Cruise saved his career.
It appears to be that way.
It's clear there's some sort of relationship there, yeah.
Yeah, because
Cruise had some, you know, for some reason, wanted this guy.
Well, Tom Cruise, everybody knows this, is an enormous movie fan. He's mm-hmm. like one of the biggest. He's got a theater in his house, and he claims to watch a movie a day and has for years. Pretty much in interviews when they say, what do you watch? And he says, well, I watch everything.
Yeah.
I see all the movies that come out, and I have a huge collection of classics.
Right.
And so I would not be surprised if Tom Cruise was a massive fan of The Usual Suspects.
Yeah, I mean, how could you not be?
People love that film.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure when he met Chris, was probably like, let's work together. You know, mm-hmm. let's work on something. I'm a big fan of your films, or at least your one. And so Valkyrie in 2008 was the first one that he wrote for Cruise. He ended up also writing apparently Ghost Protocol, as well as writing and directing Jack Reacher in 2012.
Yep.
And also writing or co-writing Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
So he is heavily involved with Cruise creatively, which is, I think, after Brad Bird turned down this film, why McQuarrie was put in to replace him as the director.
Yeah. And I think he did, again, last week I talked about it a lot. I think McQuarrie did a much better job than Bird did. It's a very different style of directing.
Yeah.
And like I said, this movie had more heart to it.
Well, it's funny too, right? Because last week you talked about how each of the Mission Impossible films reflects their director so completely.
Yep.
They all feel so much like the guy. And so this one felt so much more like a tightly wound espionage spy thriller.
Thriller.
Yeah.
There was actually a thriller aspect to this movie where that was gone in four for me. It was just a fun action
movie.
A tremendous amount of exposition and those conversations about this prime minister and this covert operation and the CIA being aware of, you know what I mean, the syndicate and all this stuff. Like, it's sort of the kind of thing where if this wasn't a Mission Impossible movie, you know that McQuarrie is like this very evolved writer, so this could have been just a spy movie without crazy stunts, you know, but you just like put all the stunts in because it's a Mission Impossible movie. But it's interesting because you could feel that, I felt anyway, in the style of direction.
Oh, yeah.
He was far more focused on it as a spy movie.
100%.
Yeah, yeah. So that was pretty interesting. So you have, that's McQuarrie's story, pretty much the same producers. And then other than that, I mean, the information that's out there on how this movie was made is sparse, to say the least.
Which is surprising for a movie of this scale.
Yeah,
you know?
agreed. It was kept pretty much under wraps. We couldn't find a shooting script. The production notes were not easy to track down. You know, as far as the film being, you know, filming began August 21st in Vienna, Austria, concluded March 12th, 2015. You know, Paramount released the movie this summer. There's another one coming. In terms of, like, most of the accounts were like, Cruise was seen filming this scene in this place.
Driving here and jumping off this there.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? Various people were confirmed to be involved, but, like, wasn't heavily publicized. Now, some of the things that are publicized are the stunts. Those are, that's the major stuff that's out there. And we can kind of get into some of that here. So that, like, the major three stunt pieces, four, I guess. There's four major stunt pieces in the film, right? Yeah. There's the opera house with the fight on the, like, the scaffolding inside.
Mm-hmm. Which is amazing.
Yeah,
which was awesome.
A great fight. Just like a good old classic.
Yeah.
It was a good old classic, and it had the comedic relief in it from, Simon Pegg hitting the switchboard and it, like, moving.
Right,
you know, like,
right.
It had an element that's kind of somewhat, sometimes different in fight scenes, which I really, really enjoyed.
That scene... It was great, the whole thing. Yeah. Like, it was very tense. You didn't know what was going to happen.
Classic Mission Impossible.
And I loved that he shot the Prime Minister in the arm. Was it the Austrian something? Yeah. Yeah, but he shot him in the arm, and I was like, genius.
That is the best thing
you could have done.
It really was. Because you didn't know. You're like, where is he going to go?
Right.
Where is he going to go? And then you're like, oh, yeah, that's the smart choice.
Of course.
And I thought he was going between the gunman in the booth and Rebecca Ferguson. Because it doesn't actually show who he's ever aiming at.
Yeah.
He just goes, he's just like up and down, up and down.
I think he was.
Yeah,
I think he was going between the two, and then he was like, wait, both of them are going to hit. So I got to hit him and move him. Brilliant.
What do you do? Shoot the hostage. Shoot the hostage. That's a bit reference.
So that's
Speed, by the way, guys.
Yeah.
So
that's one.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one. I would say two is obviously the airplane.
It's
really absurd. Three would be probably the underwater sequence.
Yes. Right.
And then four would obviously be the car chase. I guess you could say five would be like the fight at the beginning, but that's like just, we had talked about the shimmy move. It's really those four.
Some
of the things that were publicized heavily, as we said, Tom Cruise shot the airplane takeoff 8 times in a row.
At
5,000 feet. There's like a whole, he would like get to the high altitude and then he would climb inside the airplane. And this was like he says like he was scared out of his mind, he couldn't sleep the night before, all this stuff. As far as the underwater stuff, he trained with an expert for months and months and months to be able to hold his breath underwater for 6+ minutes. So that shot in the film, the underwater stuff, is executed in one take. That's
insane.
It's insane.
It's mind-blowing.
It's like you don't even need to do that.
No.
But you do it, and it's so much better.
Yeah.
It's like, that's him, to a T.
You don't need to do this,
but if you do it, it'll be so much better.
But you know what? Honestly, with this day and age, we, as a viewer, probably could not tell.
Yeah.
If it was, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, we would not have been able to tell at all if they did three takes, if there's someone right next to him with oxygen that he breaks and does oxygen, goes back into scene with editing and stuff. So the fact that he wanted to keep that integrity of the stunt is beyond, like, beyond respect for him.
Yeah, everything.
It's beyond.
No, it's crazy. It's because, as we're talking about, like, with the airplane, for instance, it's like, you could CGI that up so easily. Like,
easy.
So easy.
Just have him hanging on something. I'm a huge fan.
I have a question, though. Would we love these movies the way that we do if he didn't do the scenes?
No.
It's hard to say.
I feel like, not that it's a PR stunt, you know?
Right.
It is a PR stunt.
It definitely is, but you also, there's this authenticity to it. And you can see
it. That's what it is. It's the authenticity.
You can see it when you're watching the movie, just like when he's on the Burj Khalifa. You know he's up there. You can tell.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Do you think it's more of a PR stunt that he thinks it'll sell more movies? Or do you, I tend to think Tom Cruise just is that genuine and he just wants it to be that real.
Well, he's genuine incarnate. I mean, he's basically his aggressive sincerity is his greatest quality. But but I mean, there's a Grantland did a wonderful whole week this last week of Tom Cruise week, and they had like one or two articles written daily.
It was the greatest week in Ben's life.
It's awesome because I love intellectualizing this sort of thing, and obviously we have funny conversations about it. But I do find somebody asked me last week, why do you love Tom Cruise so much? And I was trying to explain to them the sort of like depth of icon that you're dealing with when you talk about somebody like. There's almost no one you can think of really in my lifetime that I've actually paid attention to their career that had this. There's like so much depth to it. I mean, so impactful. It's so important to so many people, right? So the articles that were on Grantland, and I recommend anybody interested in Tom Cruise's career, like on a real artistry level, to go read them. They talk about the phases of his career and the Oscar phase versus the phase we're in now. And I reference this because of the discussion about the stunts, right?
Right.
Like, that's sort of who he is right now. It's like Tom Cruise action star. And the heavily publicized discussion of him doing his own stunts, that's kind of the brand right now. Is like, that's what he is. He's not, you look at 1988 to 2000 basically, he was nominated for 3 Oscars in that time.
Yep.
And he was taking risks. He was doing everything in his power to like push. He had just come off of co-starring alongside Paul Newman and Dustin Hoffman in Color of Money and Rain Man, both of whom won Best Actor.
Yep.
You know, with his support. Then 88, he gets his first nomination for Born on the 4th of July. So now he's young guy who loses that Oscar to Daniel Day-Lewis for My Left Foot. He's this young guy. He's 28 or 29, and he's really trying. And nobody thought he was going to win that one, but he was great. But he's trying so hard. You could see him acting.
And the people that he's lost to, they're some of the greatest
legends
out there.
Yeah,
so mid-90s, right? He's doing his thing. He's making... He's trying to be in films that are, right, like A Few Good Men, and he's in...
Great film.
Yeah, Interview with a Vampire. You know, these are... You know, Far and Away. He's trying all these different kinds of movies, right? Mission Impossible 1 comes out basically the same year as Jerry Maguire.
Right.
Jerry Maguire, right? He loses to Jeffrey Rush that year. Jeffrey Rush wins for Shine. So again, like Jerry Maguire is almost like that's the ultimate Tom Cruise role.
That
like,
is the ultimate. I we've talked about this, and audience, please chime in if you think, you know, what your favorite Tom Cruise role is, or the most cruisiest of Cruise, the role that epitomizes
just
who he
different.
Is. Yeah, but I mean that's what you talk about, the aggressive sincerity.
Yeah, and this is this article was great, but like they just talk about sort of that character reflects who Tom Cruise wanted to be at that time so much.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He's this slick guy. He's such a winner, but he wants you to love him so much. And he's trying to show you how vulnerable he is the whole time he's in that role.
Which is why I feel like
he gets
shorthanded a little bit.
It's just the ultimate Cruise move, right? You can see the gears, but you're impressed
totally
by the gears.
See it. But I feel like it's more impressing now, though. Like, his character, even in this film, his character that he's that old, he's that disciplined, he's that on point, and he wants to be that genuine, and his delivery, he's charming, he's charismatic. Like, he now has way more of a spectrum.
Right.
Well, so think about after Maguire, what happens, right? The next few years is he gives himself to Stanley Kubrick in Eyes Wide Shut.
Right.
And he gives himself to Paul Thomas Anderson in Magnolia, which is by far his darkest role, right?
Yeah.
Cameron Crowe for Vanilla Sky. He loses again for his Oscar nomination that he gets for Magnolia. Doesn't win it, but he goes to this dark place where he's not at all doing what you expect from Tom Cruise. I mean,
he's like the Jekyll version of Tom Cruise in the movie. He's like charismatic, but it's fake, and it's filled with like there's so much anger behind it.
But it is too. Again, it's the roller coaster of the like what he's played, and I feel like again now more than ever he's found like I'm the action guy.
Yeah, but so check this out. So then you look at Magnolia and you say, okay, that's the last great one, right? A few years later, and that's when that great stretch happened of like Minority Report, Last Samurai, Collateral's 04. That's a great role. That's playing against type for him, but that's the last time. Because after that, he basically becomes Tom Cruise action star.
Yep.
He tried a few times. Valkyrie was interesting, right? Like Les Grossman in Tropic Thunder is interesting, but he's really that like I'm going to try to win an Oscar and be taken seriously as an actor is behind him. He doesn't do it anymore.
Well, but it might be coming back around.
I hope it does.
I do too.
Well, but, and that's kind of, you know, the beauty of it is that once he kind of lets that go and finds exactly what he's really good at, now he's going to get another role where he actually might get it. Like, sometimes exactly. It's almost forced, and it's not who he was,
so to speak.
He's always amazing. I'm not trying to say that. Totally. But, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe all that came too soon, though, in his career.
Exactly.
And maybe now that he's
older.
Or
they were
older,
pushing for it.
Yeah. But, because I cannot wait to see older Tom Cruise be dramatic.
Oh, God, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I have so much faith.
I can't wait to see older Tom Cruise continue to make Mission Impossible movies, too.
Right.
I mean...
He's going to grow two more abs for the next one.
Oh, my God.
Hey, guys, thanks for joining us on the Tom Cruise Hour here at Popcorn Talk.
I know, right?
Andrew and I were like, we're just going to keep doing the show, and by episode 25, our fans are just going to be like, these jackasses that just sit there and just talk about Tom Cruise. It's all they ever do. They just love Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not... Tom Cruise as an actor, there's not a lot to not love.
Yeah,
I mean, everyone has their personal opinions about his life and whatever. But as far as what he brings to the table in his movies, I feel like there's not much. Again, like you said earlier, it's one of the greats. You can like, you can hate, but at the end of the day, you have to respect.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, so let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's move on to...
Do we have to?
Yeah.
I know.
Let's move on to some critical and box office. So the box office on this is a quick bit, and we can kind of put... actually, you know what? I do, before we get into the critical and box office, I do want to talk about something. Because we talked about this film and what was sort of missing, the heart, right?
Right.
See, I am so not... Like, I don't agree with that at all.
Well... Okay,
soul. It's got heart.
This is the deal.
I feel like every time I've guested with you, there's soul missing in these action movies. So what would you like? I want to understand what's an action movie that you think that has lots of soul.
I mean, even The Rock, even Hummel, his sincerity, and that, you know what? And we have a clip here, and we're gonna talk about. I don't know if we're gonna show it right now. Do we do it now or not?
Yeah, I want to cue this because this is to me the proof. Like
this is the example.
Proof is in the pudding.
This is the opening scene of Mission Impossible 3.
The opening scene,
and Mission Impossible 3 is my favorite of the Mission Impossible films.
Did that have soul for you guys?
This,
yes,
Mission Impossible 3.
All right, here we go.
Okay,
this
I know it did.
Is insane. Like, you want to just watch it?
I want to watch it.
Yeah.
I will fix it. I can get it. Whatever you want.
Whatever you want, I can get it. Basic. It's a basic acting exercise.
Yeah.
It's. I'm. You have to convince me to not do the thing I'm going to do. Do everything you can.
Right. That's
And PSH is the best villain in this franchise by a mile.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah. Well, it's funny that his little co-host is the guy who's in Ray Donovan, which Katie Holmes is in now.
Oh,
she's
interesting.
Terrible.
Hmm.
I'll give you a shot.
I know where the rabbit's from.
I know. Well.
I could help you.
Like you know, plan
the airplane
that way.
His lazy delivery is so perfect.
So love is what's missing.
Yes.
Yeah, and love, for soul. Sure. Yeah.
But they're action movies.
But that's what we're talking about.
Yes. Well, like, but that's love is different than soul. Now I understand what you mean. I was like, what do you mean by that?
There's just, I mean, I guess love is a way to, like, simplify it.
Yeah.
Are you listening
but
to me?
There's no scene.
The only way you're going to get what you want is for you to...
It's startling. There's nothing in 5.
There's nothing
in 5.
Any of them.
That's anywhere near the emotional impact of the scene.
There's nothing in any of them that's emotionally. But that's when...
I'm going to kill you. I swear to God.
But then it's different emotions that you feel. Like, this feeling you feel is because there's love and it's that angst of loss.
Right.
But in 5, there's confusion, there's deception, there's definitely different feelings. So to say it has no soul for me is a little
bit. It's not no soul. It's that you see 5 and you're like, this is so good. You're like, but what if you just took 5 and you put a little bit more of this in it, like intensity, like this?
Mind blowing.
It would be insanity.
You gotta do the right thing. You gotta do what's right.
Oh God, you gotta do what's right. No.
You know what's right.
No.
10.
No.
No.
No. No.
Tear.
God, it's good.
It's exactly. And that's where, like, I agree that love is important.
You see tears. I think that's what it is.
You see tears, and there's this
so it's,
emotional...
So it's he doesn't have the emotional connection, or does it make you not emotionally connect?
I mean... Sean Harris did a good job in this.
Yeah.
He was all right.
Yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch was going to be the original.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been good, too.
Which I think would have been great. But
yeah.
And I talk about this all the time. The great villains make great movies. there's nothing with that much, like, that much at stake, other than, like, a little bit with Rebecca Ferguson's character.
And that's why we think that she's...
Well, and when Benji was going to blow up, that was good.
And I noticed that. I noticed that in that moment of, like, okay, there's real stakes here. He loves this guy, and they had the look of fear in his face. Yeah.
Maybe that was their, like, throwback to three.
It was close. It was close.
It was good. Yeah, yeah. It was. But my point is, that's why this movie, to me, is, like, super awesome. But, like, there was this, like, very important 2% missing that was, like, it's not like it makes it anything less than, like, a great action film. Because on the basis of pure action, I don't think I can think of a better action movie than this.
No, but I wonder if it has anything to do with the fact that 3 is the only one where he actually has a love interest. And because 3 didn't do well and wasn't received well, even though it's one of our favorites, maybe they were like, okay, maybe this isn't the way to go. Maybe that was a gamble.
Yeah, it
could
be
thought,
too much for the general audience.
I wouldn't be surprised.
What they want out of these movies.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't be surprised. So let's now let's officially move into critical and box office.
Yes.
Box office. Yeah, I know. So box office on this one is brief because it's obviously just came out. It made $62 million domestic, and it made another like 63 or something like that over the weekend.
Yeah, it's
international.
Like 127-ish now, I think.
So it cost 150. So in the first week, they can make their money back. I think they'll be pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
This will go. I believe this will go down as the highest grossing film of Cruise's career.
Agreed.
Probably. I mean, depending. You never know, because Mission Impossible 4 made quite a bit of money.
Right. We got the chart here of his of his career.
Highest grossing worldwide, unadjusted, which is obviously a little bit skewed, because, like, you know, Mission Impossible 2 is still number 3.
Right.
But that was 15 years ago.
And that still had the biggest opening.
And Mission Impossible 3, is that what you just said? Mission Impossible 3 is still the worst grossing out of all the Mission Impossibles, which is insane to me.
Yeah.
Because, and it even does have that song. But again, so you think, when you say that this one will be the highest, do you think they'll even continue to get better, though? Or do you think
maybe
that it's peaking?
You never know. I mean, you would never have expected that 4 and 5, after the drop on 3 and then the amount of time that was between, you would never really think that he would be able to bring the franchise back. It's sort of miraculous that they have.
It's Tom Cruise.
I think if they do a 6th movie within the next 4 years, like if it's 3 years away, 3 or 4, I think it could make more money.
Yeah, probably. I mean, because 4 and 5 were so successful and 5 was reviewed so well.
I want to see 6 already.
Yeah, I
want to
see
it now.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Yeah, completely.
That'd be interesting if they start doing movies like that on Netflix.
He started
watch a bunch.
Oh yeah.
He started talking about Edge of Tomorrow 2 also, I heard.
Oh, really?
Which is a weird idea. I don't know how you would make that movie again.
I don't like that idea at
all.
And I love that movie.
Because that movie's just so unique. But anyway, this movie did pretty well, very well so far. Paramount, $150 million budget, took in 56 domestic, its opening weekend, another 65 foreign. As you said, it's at 127 now.
Mm-hmm.
Second highest opening for Mission Impossible film, behind the 57.6. It just barely missed MI2.
It's just so crazy that two, and also if you adjusted that for inflation now, it'd be even bigger. It'd be a bigger gap.
Well, right? That's also, you know, you talk about like
John Woo in the 90s.
Well, I was going to say, you talk about that Oscar period where Tom Cruise was managing to, it's not like he was just doing Oscar movies.
Yeah.
He was obviously balancing doing Mission Impossible the same year as Jerry Maguire. So when that movie came out, it was after 12 years of Cruise gunning for an Oscar, being the guy.
Yeah.
Because what follows after Mission Impossible 2 is, as we said, that stretch with Minority Report, The Last Samurai, Collateral, War of the Worlds. Like,
great.
Just a huge stretch of massive movies that made a ton of money and were extremely well reviewed. So he was at his peak, really.
Yeah.
You know, like peak popularity of Tom Cruise has to be like 98, 99 through like 05, 06.
Yeah, I have a question for you guys. You might not know the answer. I don't know that I know the answer. When they do these sheets, like these, you know, income and stuff like that, does this have to do with the movie tickets? Like, you know, we've seen a jump in movie ticket sales, or is this just the percentage of that goes to the movie? You know what I mean? Like, how does that calculate that a movie ticket in the 80s cost $5 and now
costs you're talking about adjusted. You can also pull the adjusted.
Oh, okay. It does have that?
I don't like pulling the adjusted. I prefer the worldwide unadjusted, just because I in my mind, it's like easier. It's like, if a movie came out 30 years ago, obviously it's going to be lower, but just... I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they do have the adjustment for ticket price inflation and all that, and it is interesting to look at. It does, doubles some of the movies that were made in the 90s, like their budget. I mean, their
budget and their what the tickets cost.
Right, exactly.
So,
my thing is just like when you look at like the shift. You can talk about inflation, but you also have to think about like digital and like video on demand.
That's what I'm saying.
And the shifts and stuff. So I feel like I prefer to go with the real numbers.
Yeah,
and just
I feel like it keeps it clean.
But, you know.
I was just curious.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they also, like, there's more, they open in more theaters now. So that's, like, another thing that's unfair in the favor of modern movies, right? This had, this opened in almost just shy of 4,000 theaters.
Right.
So it's pretty nuts.
That seems like a little bit.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't seem like that big of a number when you think about it, but it is.
Yeah, totally.
It's all over the world. You're like, only 4,000 theaters all over the world, but yeah.
So, yeah, so let's talk critical. This movie was the best reviewed Mission Impossible movie. Yeah. Crazy, right? At this point, after all the reviews came out, top critics still give it a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. The audience score is 92%, which is hilarious. That never happens. Never happens that the audience on an action movie is lower than the top critics.
You know what? You know what I wanted to say?
Or is this good?
That I haven't seen it happen a lot. When I went to the press screening, and usually at the press screening, I have to admit, there's not that much enthusiasm. People were laughing out loud, and people clapped at the end of this.
Really?
Which was very unique for this kind of, you know, I've seen a lot of movies that evoke emotion, and it was really, like, it was like you felt like you were in the theater. It was pretty awesome. So it was definitely well received.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Like, it's shocking. I mean, we talked about it. It was projected. I read an article the week before this came out saying, we expect this to make $40 million opening weekend, which would be a little bit of a disappointment.
Right.
We expect the movie to be good. But, like, there was a lot of cynical critics that were like, the people don't really care that much. And I think it's crazy when you just see people want to like this movie.
They do.
Right.
That's what's fascinating about this is, like, you have these heroes in your culture that are these freaking icons where it's like people want to like greatness. It's like you want to like Kobe. You don't want to hate Kobe. You want to like him. It sucks when you dislike him. But at the end of the day, it's like you want Tom Cruise to be on top. It's not fun to watch, like, the heroes die.
Right.
So it's way better if this movie does well. And I think it's like you look at a movie like 3, at the time 3 came out, people didn't want to like Tom Cruise at that moment,
right?
Which is why 3 did so poorly. It's why it was reviewed poorly, even though it's actually a very good movie.
Right.
So that's why top critics giving it a 95% is not as surprising to me, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense.
Right.
I mean, what Christopher Orr from The Atlantic said was, it kind of, like, encapsulated how I felt about this. And you don't overcome the impossible, in quotes, by thinking it over a little more carefully. You overcome it through the application of sheer, unvarnished willpower, a quality that Cruise has always possessed in abundance.
Yeah, it's
and that's like exactly what this movie
gave me
is.
The chills again.
Yeah, right? Like,
that's
it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's because he cares and he tries so hard that you can't help but love it.
It has an 8.0 on IMDb. Andrew and I have been discussing this for the longest time on this, and we talk about it every week on the show, the relevance of the IMDb Top 250. And I strongly argue against it. I think it's a stupid list. But it's basically a movie has to finish with a high enough rating out of 10 to make that Top 250. 8.1 is like the baseline to make the Top 250.
Yeah, it's like what 250 is.
Yeah. So this has an 8.0. This is like, so basically this
didn't make the cut.
Currently somewhere. Yeah, but currently this sits probably somewhere in the like 350 range or something. So
but would you call this movie one of the best 250 movies of all time?
No.
Exactly.
No.
Which is why it's got an 8.0.
But
oh, look at that.
I hate that list
so much. He does.
Anyway, it's, I mean, as far as how it's reviewed, I mean, it's being reviewed currently. We've just sat here.
It was hard to find a bad review for this movie.
Does that 8.0, is it right? Is it just once right after? Or does it depend on how much money it eventually, like, does that number change? Like, in a
it
week
changes,
from now,
it's
after
from,
it's maybe the highest grossing of all Tom Cruise movies, will that 8.0 go
well,
up or no?
The finances won't play a part, but it's based on number of reviews by people that think they know how to talk about movies.
That's not entirely true. There's an algorithm behind it.
It's critics and people. And there's an amalgamation of those two numbers to make the total.
So if someone was having a bad day and pissed off when they went to go see this movie, it can affect its rank.
Yeah, but it also
algorithm,
but there's also like the more people that review it, obviously it averages together. The ratings that movies get on IMDb is not really my quarrel. Like, I think that's smart. It's just like you thinking about like when movies came out and all that sort of thing. It's very, very difficult to make a top 250 list in any context. It's a very hard list to make.
I can't even list my five favorite movies.
Yeah,
I would like go to war in my brain over picking five movies.
Yeah,
you know, so
it's difficult. So
it is.
But anyway, this movie is extremely well reviewed. It will continue to change, obviously, as we go forward. I actually had this feeling when I watched this, which is common, which is like my expectation is so high and I'm so excited for this movie that I actually think I'm going to enjoy it more the second time, like after it's calmed down. Like if I watch it again in a few months on video, I have a feeling I'll like it even more.
Oh, God, I can't wait to watch this at home.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
We have a friend of ours that said that he fell asleep in this movie. He said he fell asleep and that Alec Baldwin just said the same thing over and over and over and it killed it for him. First of all, Alec Baldwin has about 10 minutes of screen time in a two-hour movie. And if you fell asleep during this movie, you must have been blackout drunk.
Yeah.
Like, how do you fall asleep?
You
gotta be both.
Let's move away from criticizing our friend.
No, it's not criticizing our friend. It's talking about... We're talking about critical reception right now, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about people that watch the movie.
Right, right.
So that's what I'm doing.
Oh.
Is I'm talking about how is it possible for someone to say that about this movie?
It makes zero sense.
Yeah. I've actually seen it twice.
Yeah.
So, and I liked it better the first time.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking more like, I think in time, like when I watch it and I'm expecting less from it. Like I liked 4 better the second time. 4 the first time was like, this is awesome, but it was lacking soul. It felt better the second time.
Well, it's very interesting because if we think about it, I watched them all again last week. So I watched 1, 2, 5, 3, 4.
Okay.
So that's maybe why when I first saw 5, I was like, this is the best one ever, blowing everything
away. Right,
because
you just seen 1 and 2 recently.
Then I saw 3 and was like, this one's great too.
Yeah,
and
so
then
good.
I saw 4 and I was like,
which is your favorite?
Good as the other two.
Which is the best?
I think 5 and 3 are pretty
close. The one thing about 3, and we should definitely get into Ultimate Action Scene here because it's a sweet one to talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, again, there's not that much info, but the one thing about 3 is that we showed the one scene. The other scene in 3 that's so badass is the bridge scene where it's got that stunt. It's got the stunt from the trailer where he gets out from under the car while the missile is headed towards the bridge.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he's running. The missile hits the bridge. Yeah. He gets thrown sideways into the car and he gets up all dazed and the drone then flies over his head.
Yeah.
And that's like the other shot from that movie that I remember. So you, like, it's not the same kind of action where he's like climbing a building or like flying on a plane.
It just feels more real.
It's like
the
practical
action. The Carrie Russell scene.
Yeah.
Saving her and then her, like, her brain chip going off.
Yeah.
Her eye, like, rolling. It's like, it was just...
Yeah.
It was dark and it was real.
Yeah, movies.
Yeah.
That's sweet. All right, so the ultimate action scene in this movie, I think we all can agree, was the motorcycle chase, right?
So sick.
Yeah, I mean, I love the underwater stuff, but the motorcycle chase was so baller. It was just unbelievable.
Please, for our audience, what did the stunt coordinator say about who's going to be driving?
so bad.
I know.
So sweet. So awesome. Yeah.
I love the Simon Pegg's like, oh, Cruz is going to be driving the car, really? And he's like, why? And he's like, because we don't have anybody who can drive better than Tom Cruise.
Right.
Like, he's the best driver we've got. Tom Cruise is the best stunt driver we have. What?
Yeah, and that's why, again, we talk about this. We talk about this in the building and the plane and the water.
Yeah.
It's so real in this car chase scene.
The cockpit stuff, like, inside the car.
And you see Simon Pegg, because he's actually in there, too, while Tom Cruise is driving. Like, you're like, okay, we just act together, dude. My life is in your hands now. You're going to do, like, 360 spins with motorcycles and e-brakes.
And when he was in the corridor, or whatever you want to call it, and he hits the e-brake and takes out all the bikes.
Oh, my God.
That was almost a fist pump move.
It was.
Scene too.
It was Simon Pegg's face.
Yeah.
He's like, ah! Like, it's real.
That was, that was
an incredible
moment.
And when he was like, you should
moment.
Put your seatbelt on now.
He's like, now? Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently Cruz, and I don't know which injuries were, but apparently he was injured 6 times during the making of this movie. Unsurprising. Also,
what a badass.
Yeah. So we have a little like making of feature, right? We can sort of show here. We talk about this.
Yeah,
it's got a little bit of the, you know, the B-roll of just like me talking about it and the stuff. But like the bikes and the cars and everything, they have to go in and they have to adjust those cars and take out a bunch of like safety modifications.
I wish you said raise the seats.
Right.
So like they have to take out all these things that are built into the cars to prevent drifting, and like things with like the bikes to like create balance, so that they're able to crash the bikes, so they're able to drift, because the products, the BMW products that are obviously heavily involved.
All the good guys drove BMWs in this movie, and all the bad guys drove Mercedes and Audis.
In the
other
movies as well.
Yeah,
usually BMWs. Yeah.
It's a huge product placement machine. For BMW.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, they have to go in and they have to take all kinds of stuff out of them. But I mean, just like Cruise driving between moving trucks.
Yeah.
And like
down the stairs, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, that was insane.
The reverse jump.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Him like nicking his knee.
That was really cool.
It's just
that was
getting tossed off the bike and like the speed.
Yeah.
Like the sheer speed that they conveyed in that scene was just
And I feel like, too, that's almost like how you said it earlier. Motorcycles are in, you know, it's almost in the contract. He's going to be on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Most of the time, he doesn't have a helmet. And it takes, right, for me, yeah, that scene of him when he's coming up to them on the, yeah, on-ramp. It, that's like Top Gun. It's the same motorcycle scene where, yeah, he's got the same look.
And the best
it
thing
points
is,
you all back,
is that the two stunt drivers on the other two bikes are wearing helmets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, too.
Did Rebecca Ferguson do her motorcycles, too?
She did a lot of her own stunts, like the opera house scene, like when, yeah, they jump, yeah, off the building and they rappel down the side of it. Mm-hmm. That was the first day of filming, and she was like, Cruise was like, oh, yeah, I do my own stunts. Like, and he's like, okay, like, guess throw me off a building. Cool.
Right.
Like, and so, right, she kind of got on board with it. But it is funny, the motorcycle thing. Like, he's got the one shot in Edge of Tomorrow, like, riding. It's completely unnecessary to the story.
Yeah.
It's totally unnecessary. But there's just a shot of
but
him on a motorcycle.
It's so necessary. Yeah. Because it's Tom, yeah, Cruise. Yeah. It's totally necessary.
It. Yeah. I mean, some of the moments that I thought were coolest in the bike scene were things that are like, and I shout out to my buddy Max Brockman, who's a fan of the show and watches all the episodes.
Yeah.
But he pointed out, he was like,
hi, Max.
Yeah, hi, Max.
What's up, Max?
He pointed out, he was like, you know, it was very practical. Like, what would happen if you're on a motorcycle and a guy driving at fast speed tries to take out a gun, takes his eyes off the road to shoot you? If he takes his eyes off the road, he'll crash.
Yeah.
Like, right. That's how he dies. It's like, it's not like you do anything crazy. It's like, he's not a very good driver because he's not looking at the road and trying to shoot you.
Right.
And he crashes his bike. And that's
going, like,
right,
what appears to be like 80, 90, 100 miles an hour. It's,
yeah,
not a good idea.
You know, and God, some of the shots too with like going around the corner and like he just looks over his shoulder for a second as the guy's bike just like tumbles and explodes, yeah, off the edge.
Yeah. I like when he kind of like knocked the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
On,
yeah,
the bike. He's kind of like, and I, yep, was like, bumper bikes.
Yeah. I also love that he was like Cruz dies and then he's like concussed, yeah, kind of.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
hey,
it's
Benji, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's another thing. It's like very realistic. It's like, of course, you just get your ass kicked and thrown around all the time. Like, you're going to be kind of concussed. And,
yeah,
like, that's the, right, way it would work.
Or you just died and got defibrillated and, yeah, got brought back to life.
That was really fun. And again, that's that comic relief in there where, mm-hmm, he like goes to jump,
yeah,
over the car and he can't. Like, I love that.
Yeah,
bit.
Yeah.
Like, it was really, really good.
It was awesome. Yeah, so Wade Eastwood was the stunt coordinator on this, and Wade's worked on a ton of different stuff. I know he worked on Edge of Tomorrow as well.
Yeah.
So he's definitely someone who continues to travel and work with crews, and he's a,
well, there's that trust.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He's just kind of a genius when it comes to designing this sort of stuff.
Right.
We're trying our best to kind of get him in here, but we haven't been able to get him in the studio yet for an episode.
Right.
There, right, will continue to be movies that Wade works,
Wade,
on.
Wade, we're going to keep trying, man.
We're going to keep trying, man. But I do want to get into favorite lines and hero villain ranking, all that stuff. So, yeah, guys, this is the part of the show where there are a few things we have you interact with us on. Obviously, the stuff at the beginning is a lot of fun. And then here, we're going to do our favorite line, where we think the hero and the villain rank all time, recasting the movie. And this is a weird recast. We'll explain it in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, which of the three categories it fits into, and then we'll do a sign-off. So let's start with favorite lines.
Me?
What do you guys got?
Okay, so my favorite line is actually a comedic line. And it's when they're all back in, like, I think it's the warehouse or wherever they're at, and Renner's like, so let me get this right. We're back to square one with the syndicate, except for now all four of us are wanted by the CIA. Really proud of us, guys.
Yeah.
Like, it's just his delivery, and that's what you're thinking, too. You're like, what just happened? They're just,
yeah,
they literally have not accomplished anything yet, or it appears that way.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I had two again. This one, there's so many twos for me. I really liked when Benji said to him, a minute ago you were dead.
Yeah.
Like, that was really fun.
What are you talking about?
And then I had a Renner line, too, which is interesting because last week we were talking about how Renner, his delivery wasn't amazing. And I feel,
right,
like he stepped it up in this film, mm-hmm, as well. And I couldn't say that last week. But I like when he was like, a car chase. And you wanted the 4x4.
Yeah.
Or I don't know exactly if that's how it came out, but it was,
yeah,
very. He's like, oh, okay, great. We got this truck. And you see him do like an Austin Powers,
yeah, yeah,
turnaround.
It's, yeah,
kind of awesome.
You know, he has it. He's kind of starting to show that,
yeah,
he has that movie star charisma.
Right. Yeah, Renner?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he can just kind of say things.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're enjoyable.
Yeah, he's good. I like Renner a lot. I think he's very good.
I mean, obviously, right, he's no Tom Cruise, but if he's going to replace him, I feel like he's starting to do a decent job.
Yeah, it's, right, weird, like, to see, like, they stepped him down in action-wise in this movie.
Yeah.
He mostly just complains. Like, that's really what he does in this movie. He doesn't really do anything action-wise. Like, he doesn't have any action.
Very little.
Yeah.
There's one running together,
exactly,
scene.
Yep.
Okay, but he's outclassed because it's Cruise running. No.
They wouldn't talk, yeah, about it.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. The other one with Luther, that was, like, funny. Is like, it's cool to have Ving Rhames back, obviously, because we love Ving Rhames.
Right.
But, like, he really doesn't look like he should be in the field anymore.
No.
Like, there's the line when...
Well, he's not.
But
yeah, he's, like, retired.
There's, like,
he
the line
is,
where,
yeah,
she's like, she got away. And it's like, yeah. I was like, of course you get away, you're waddling.
Like, yeah, like you can't even get through a crowd of people in a mall.
But again, I feel like, I don't know that we ever saw him up to par with the other people in that. Like, no, his job always, is like, always kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So I didn't hate that.
Agreed, agreed. My favorite line, I think, has to be, and I, you know, I searched high and low to try to find the script so I could get the exact line.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, it's that whole long monologue that Alec Baldwin delivers when they're in the room with the Prime Minister towards the end of the movie.
Right.
And there's clips from this that are cut in the trailer.
Yeah.
But essentially he says something like, I'm going back out there. And Alec Baldwin, the whole movie, has been diminishing he has been sort of diminishing the IMF, and he hasn't really given Ethan Hunt any credit.
Yeah.
But he looks at them and he's just like, Ethan Hunt is a highly trained, highly motivated individual. Unequaled by his peers.
Yeah,
and he's
immune
to countermeasures.
Yeah.
He says something like, he is the walking, living, breathing incarnate of unpredictability or something like that. It's like, it's the most ridiculous line, but it's just like the ultimate homage to like, this guy's Jason Bourne, but PG-13.
Yeah.
Like, he can do anything.
Yeah.
Right.
He's James Bond. You got nothing. Yeah. And like, I just loved it that they like finally give him the line.
Yeah,
I wish
it's like, it's the greatest thing because Alec Baldwin is the one that has to pay credit to him.
Right. Yeah.
Like, well. Here's the truth, you know, like,
where is Hunt?
Yeah.
But you know, it's really interesting what you bring up. I feel like I would like to see where we categorize this movie, because we always compare it to other action films, but what other action films can pull off PG-13 and still be this good? A lot of the other ones we compare it to are R. So they can have more racy, they can have more sex, they can have more this, they can have more that. So it makes it kind of almost more entertaining or enjoyable.
There's only two. It's Bond and Bourne.
Even Bond is darker nowadays than it used to be.
It's still PG-13.
But all the Bournes are PG-13?
All the Bournes are PG-13. I believe. I don't know about the newest one, but I believe they all are.
Yeah. So yeah, that's favorite line. Now, hero villain ranking, this is a funky one because we always talk about this. You have to take the incarnation of your hero in that particular movie. Oh, we forgot to get those chart together again.
Yeah.
What are we doing? We're lagging. We got to get that going.
We're going to get fired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From our own show.
Yes.
For not pulling off our
own. Ben, you're fired.
For not pulling off our own chart.
Yeah.
This is, where does Mission Impossible Ghost or Rogue Nation Cruise rank? And does Lane, the villain played by Sean Harris, where does he rank? I mean, for me, he's a fine villain. He doesn't stick with me.
He's got his eye twitch, and he's ruthless, and
he's good. Yeah. He's not like
Cloak and Dagger.
Not really worth talking about to me.
How do you feel? Okay, so this is the first time the villain hasn't died in one of these movies. You got Voight. You got Hunt.
Hunt.
Dougray Scott, and you've got Philip C. And you've got the guy in the end of Mission Impossible 4 at the bottom of the factory.
Sure.
This is the only time the villain just doesn't die. And he's just trapped in this bulletproof box. And
I'm pretty sure he dies in there.
He doesn't.
They put him in like a police van.
Yeah, he's not dead. I know he's not dead.
Because they would have shown him die.
They would have showed it, and it's also, I mean, it's something I read online.
Well, also, I guess they put Tom Cruise in, when he was in the record store, he had
the same gas,
and he didn't die. Oh, you think he's going to come back?
I don't want him to. That's what I'm saying, is I wished he would have died.
I wish that we could have Philip Seymour Hoffman back.
Yeah, well, I think we all wish that. Yeah,
it makes me sad. Yeah. I mean, where does Rogue Nation Cruise rank? I mean, like, it's got to be on the list. Because I think I want to say, if I remember correctly, and I wish we had the graphic. We will have a graphic at some point. I want to say that MI3 Cruise for me was like 9th or 10th or like 14th or 15th. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that Ghost Protocol Cruise was like 23rd. And I like this cruise better.
Yeah.
So I think Ethan Hunt, Circa Rogue Nation is probably like top 20. So it's like 18th or 19th maybe.
That's somewhere what I was right going to say, top 20 as well. Yeah. Now that I know that there's a real list that exists, and only 20 can fit in top
25.
20.
Yeah.
I feel like with how full circle this whole franchise has come, that you kind of have to call Ethan Hunt, period.
Yeah.
Like a top 5 hero of all time.
Yeah, it's
just him.
It's weird how that works, right? So you almost like have to. It makes you think that like MI3 Ethan Hunt maybe is higher than we're realizing, because if that's the best Ethan Hunt, maybe it's better than like 12th or 11th.
Right.
Maybe it truly is top 5. I mean, you start to put him up against like the greats, though. You
Absolutely.
Start to put him up against John Rambo. You start to put him up against Riggs and McClane, and you start to put him up against.
But he wins for me in most of those categories.
Well, but that's funny because last week I said top 5,
right?
And you guys were like, oh hell no.
Well, because we were talking about 4 specifically.
Yes, 4.
We were talking about Hunt is
Hunt as a character. In this one in five?
In, well, oh, I'm saying in general, all, like just Hunt.
So you're combining
right.
them. Yeah,
like if you talk oh, about Riggs, it's all of the lethal weapons, right, right. you know, like if we're going
to
do that.
Yeah, I don't know. And he's, I feel like Ethan Hunt's going to continue to amaze us.
Yeah.
So I'm on board with that.
In five, excuse me, in Rogue Nation, I'd put him at, yeah, in between three and Ghost Protocol. So maybe like high teens.
Yeah. Like high that. Teens, yeah, 17th. Yeah. I think we're kind of on the same page there.
Yeah.
Oh, and actually, while we're talking about this, let's who are your guys' all-time greatest action star?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Who, you know, we talked about it early on. It's like, who rivals Tom Cruise? We talked about Harrison
Norris.
Ford, Chuck Norris, Steven Seagal, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, but, you have your Willis's.
Right.
You have your yeah. Cage to some degree. Yeah. Had his a few really good years there.
So yeah. Who is it for you guys? Who is your number one all-time greatest action star?
Yeah, I want to know.
Yeah.
Me too. I totally want to know.
Please leave it in the iTunes comments. Give us a five-star rating and let us know. Just yeah. Prove that you're out there.
Yeah, prove right. that iTunes is the thing that people still do.
Right. So we all kind of agree Sean Harris is not...
He's not top 50 for me.
Yeah, doesn't...
I, yeah.
Doesn't register.
I put top 50, but like...
Yeah.
Because it was like...
Right.
So last week we did recast. So this is a part where we talk about if this movie were made, in this case it's brand new, if this were made in like the, you know, early 90s essentially, who would you have cast in the roles? And so normally we just eschew Tom Cruise from the Ethan Hunt recast
yeah.
because he's been doing it forever. So it's impossible almost, but... And we'll recast the other characters. We did, for Ghost Protocol last week, we recast Simon Pegg and Jeremy Renner, and we recast Tom or someone else.
Patton?
Paula Patton.
Yeah.
Because we did those last week, we changed it up. And this is a special one. What we're doing is recast Rebecca Ferguson, Sean Harris.
Like villain, normal.
And if you were going to start the franchise in 1996, so this would be if this was made in 96, and the franchise was starting with a different hero that would make five movies, different mm-hmm. actor. Who do you think could have pulled it off?
Right.
Not would they have been better, but if you were going to start with someone else, who would it be?
And over like 20 plus years, they could still do this.
Could do five movies.
Yeah.
That's the question. I'm going to jump in first.
Please.
Do it.
For my villain, for mm-hmm. Sean Harris, if this was made in 1996, I'm going to go with Stellan Skarsgård.
Oh, I love him.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Love Skarsgård.
Skarsgård. And incidentally, his son was in a film with Rebecca Ferguson.
Right.
So look at that.
I went with a Mr. Ralph Fiennes.
Oh, mid-90s Ralph Fiennes, like English yeah. patient Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah, and I love him in Bruges.
Yeah.
And he's, God, I mean, he's the worst in Schindler's List.
He's incredible, amazing in the Wes Anderson film, the huge one.
Halloween?
No, the Wes Anderson one from last year.
Oh, I'm thinking of Wes Craven.
I'm completely blank. Darjeeling Limited.
Was it the Grand Budapest?
Grand Budapest. Yeah, yeah. He's fantastic in that.
Mind blown.
Yeah, no, so I think he would have been a great villain in the 90s.
Yeah.
I went with Jack Nicholson.
Love it.
96 Jack?
Mm-hmm.
Pledge, the crossing guard.
He's
Wolf.
A little older, but
a little older,
great.
But still. I mean, what's his name? Sean Harris is 50.
That's good.
He's 50?
Well, no, he was born in 66, so he's 49.
He looks great.
48.
He looks pretty good, too.
Looks good.
Yeah. So I feel like,
good for
yeah.
you, Sean.
I feel like the way that the pictures you always see Christopher McQuarrie dressing with his glasses and
yes.
his hair and his suits.
Yeah.
It's very clear that like the character he created for Sean Harris is like the supervillain version of Christopher McQuarrie.
Right, yeah, Solomon.
Well,
yeah.
well dressed, the glasses, he's got like the sharp hair, like the sweet jackets.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty softly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. I'm going to jump in then with my Rebecca Ferguson recast.
Face to face.
Yeah, it's good. I went with Uma Thurman.
Pick that up.
See,
and then she's a little young.
Yeah,
a little young. But it was funny because that's kind of like I kind of mentioned her last week.
Yeah,
and I feel like in the same. So I was trying to think different, and I went with Drew Barrymore.
Really?
And he's Drew.
Yeah,
like that's like prior to Charlie's Angels, like right around the same year.
Yeah, I mean, there's not.
I know.
I mean, you could always, you know. It's like you could always default to Angelina Jolie, I feel like,
right.
in anything, but trying to, like...
She's
I mean, Angie
though.
Probably
yeah,
would have...
Young.
She's young, but that was, like, Girl Interrupted in those
yeah.
days where
yeah.
she was kind of badass still and edgy.
It's true.
Absolutely.
So maybe her more than Drew, but I feel
that's
like
a good casting choice,
I feel like
actually.
She's, like, a go... Angie?
Yeah,
yeah. I just feel like she's almost always the go-to.
She's
so
an easy
I was
go-to.
Trying to think of yeah. something different, but I feel like between
I haven't used her yet for any recast.
Oh, really?
I think I might have for one, but yeah, it's true. We always talk about her and how
yeah.
she would be so great at it.
Yeah, I think she'd be. Yeah, she'd be solid.
Yeah,
I went Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, Like the mask.
The mask. Oh, that so red dress.
So sexy.
Oh,
unreal.
Yeah. Absurd.
90s
Cameron Diaz. I don't think she could pull off Tough, though.
But then she goes and she does, you know, Charlie's Angels. And I know it's jokey, but she
yeah,
can at
I don't
least,
think. She wouldn't have sold me, and she wouldn't have screwed my mind like
that's
Rebecca
what those
did.
Two, Barrymore and Cameron Diaz, they both...
I feel like Drew could pull... Well, I don't know. But I feel like Drew could pull off more so the serious flip of that
maybe.
Than Cameron Diaz.
Uma's just
I feel
edgy.
Like Cameron could have done yeah. it if she went through the 6 months of training that Ferguson did. She yeah. would have beefed up a little bit. And
if you train with Cruz, yeah. you can do anything.
Well, and that's the thing, too. I feel like Angelina Jolie would have
oh,
done
would have.
All the stunts, yeah. too, and she would have went through it. Like, yeah. you see her in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Like, she's, I mean, I get it's a lot yeah. later, but she's super tough and
we
badass.
Had a great moment with Debbie on our show when she talked about that, where when actors have stunt drivers driving for them, they don't really care about what's going on.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, let's just happen, and I'll come back in and do the rest of the movie. Angie would pull Debbie aside, and she was like, "Well, where would my hands be?
Right?
Like, would it be what would they be doing if we were actually turning this minivan around like that?" She cares.
She wants
and that's
to
one
know.
Thing that makes her
that
so great.
That was one of the best scenes ever.
Yeah.
You guys did that already, Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
No.
No.
Oh.
Like Lyman, we could.
Yeah.
I love Lyman.
I love Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I love Lyme.
Speaking of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Brad Pitt
for Cruz to start the
Brad
franchise.
Brad Pitt. He's the same age. He's a couple years younger. He still looks great. He's a badass.
Again, go to.
Yeah, I mean, right. Like, who? How many movie stars are like movie starish enough? Here's my only
movie starish enough and have aged well enough.
Yeah, right.
He's still pulled this off.
So here's my this would be my quarrel with that. I don't think it's incorrect. I think it's like if that had happened, this would have worked. Like,
yeah.
It would be. I don't know that it would be the same franchise, but it would have worked. What I think Brad Pitt lacks. The only reason I don't see it is that he's not historically like an action movie lead guy. He's more of like a drama lead who's like really slick. So like Ocean's 11 is a great example of like a franchise where he's a center point of the franchise, but it's not because he's like a stone cold badass. It's like more like
Snatch, Troy,
yeah.
Seven.
Right.
Sydney's kind of an idiot, but
he's
I mean,
not an idiot in
well,
Seven.
He kind of is. It's kind of that's the thing. He's like he's not very smart. He's like has
no.
The
that's
notes.
Not true. He's not smart. He's just new. He's a rookie. He's like young.
Well, we can debate this.
He's
off,
green.
Off screen.
He's
but,
green.
But my thing is with Brad Pitt, I just there's an action lead that like misses me on that. That's I don't know. But it's not far from it. I mean, who knows? Because if he had gone in that direction, maybe we'd think about him differently, right?
Yeah. I said Ed Norton.
Oh, interesting. He's intense. Different.
It would have been slightly different, but he's aged well. He's super intense. I feel like he has good delivery.
I love Edward Norton.
And I love him.
Great actor.
One of my favorites.
Does he have enough comedy, do you think, to pull off Ethan Hunt?
I think so. I think he has that wit.
Yeah.
He's yeah.
Because it's not like, it's not true comedy. It's that wit and that delivery of like.
Right.
Being on point and saying something, like reacting right away.
That's another thing that I thought about with Pitt is that look that we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
When he knocks that dude out in Snatch in the first fight, and he's just kind of like...
Yeah.
That's one of the best parts of the whole movie.
There's elements to Pitt that for sure I could see as Ethan.
Right, right.
Like certain elements that are undeniable.
What's your genius?
I'm not stoked on it, but I went with Matthew McConaughey.
And I'll tell you the reason. The reason I went with McConaughey is because if you think about mid-90s McConaughey, that's like a Time to Kill McConaughey.
Dazed and Confused McConaughey.
Which is a bit young. It's a bit young. Like, but Cruz as Ethan Hunt in the first one looks very, very young.
He
so you could dress McConaughey up as a little older. He has the sort of like shit kicker, like swagger confidence thing going on. Like that comedy.
He doesn't ring as tough to me.
Yeah, what action movies?
Yeah, no, I mean, like I'm telling you this. I wasn't super, super stoked about it. I just don't look at him and go, I don't believe you could pull it off. He's got the physicality. Like, even just watching him last year in True Detective Season 1, like, punching people, I totally buy it. Mm-hmm. He's, you know what I mean? I totally...
Right. Like, he has the longevity.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a key to this role.
That's the hardest thing about casting this role.
Right.
hasn't put himself in that action position so many times, but in terms of the confidence and the humor and all that, the sort of, like, that look, the same thing you're talking with Pitt, I guess I have more faith in him as like an action lead if he had been put in that position than Pitt because it's tough. Like I said, I'm not stoked about it. I think the bottom line is there's no one you can really put in this position
you
that you have.
You can't recast this movie.
Well, I almost said I want to say Jason Bourne. That's not his name. I can't think of
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
Yeah.
I feel like that was because
the first Bourne is only a few years after the first Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
It's 5 years later. So you could have.
But he's Jason Bourne.
He doesn't have that
Yeah.
That jokey, like, that charm to him.
He plays, like, the much more serious. Yes. Yeah. He's much better for Jason Bourne than he ever would have been for...
Absolutely.
True.
Yeah, yeah. So let's end
the show.
Good job,
casting directors. Yeah. You're doing your job right.
The last thing we do on the show, if we don't do Cage versus Cruz,
right,
which we're not going to do this week, is we talk about which
Benji,
of
the
three...
the syndicate is real.
Yeah. We talk about which of the three categories this movie fits into. There are three action movie categories in our opinion, in our humble opinions, and those three categories are totally legitimate. This is like a movie that is like completely real and awesome and not in any way ridiculous, really. So that's movies like The Fugitive, or we'll say like
Die Hard
or something. Yeah. Yeah, these are action classics. Then you have totally ridiculous, which is like fall off a cliff of absurd. So that's going to be like Con Air and
Face Off,
movies that are like super silly, but they're
Starship
awesome.
Starship Troopers.
For a movie to even be in like our discussion, it has to be a good movie.
Yeah.
You can't just like put a bad movie and then try to categorize it. We just would never do a bad movie on the show.
Well, in our opinion.
In our opinion.
Yes.
And the final category is ridiculously legitimate, which is like the hybrid category. So that's like, you know, movies that are totally awesome but also campy, have like a notable award worthy performance, but maybe it's just hidden in the middle of an action movie so people don't take it that seriously.
Right. Air Force One, The Rock.
Yes. Point Break, Speed.
Yeah. Point Break.
It's my favorite movie ever. Which of the three categories
I
want
to go
Mission
last
Impossible,
on this. I want to hear what you guys have to
Rogue
say.
Nation.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it in Totally Legitimate again.
I'm going to put it in Totally Legitimate again as well, because I put four in Totally Legitimate, even like unwillingly.
Yeah.
But like for what they're both trying to achieve, this just achieves it even better than four does. And it's trying to do the same thing.
Exactly.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. I think this is totally legitimate. He dies, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
He gets saved by Rebecca Ferguson numerous times. Like, this is a real movie. This is a real thing. Benji gets kidnapped. He's the guy you would kidnap.
Yeah.
How do you say it has no soul? Tom Cruise dies.
It has soul.
Doesn't have soul. It has heart.
It's a real movie, Jack.
Just saying.
Yeah. It's great. So that's our show today, guys. Long one. Wow, 80 minutes. Yeah. Holy moly.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you
for tuning in for 2 weeks in a row. If you guys want to hear reviews of any of the other Mission Impossible films, we have now done Mission Impossible 3, 4, and 5, or we should say Mission Impossible 3, Ghost Protocol, and Rogue Nation, as well as a whole bunch of other shows you can find on the Popcorn Talk YouTube channel. You can find us on iTunes. Leave us comments. Let us know what you think, if we're doing a good job or a bad job. You can tweet at me if you want to find me at Ben Bateman Media. I'm also on Instagram.
At Andrew Guy.
And you guys can find me at IAMSTEFZ.
Z.
Thanks, Steph.
Z.
Thanks, you guys, for watching and listening and hanging out with us today. We will see you next week. Boom.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.